From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. A new YouTube video that's racking up millions of views shows a woman enduring a barrage of catcalls as she walks the streets of New York. The viral video has struck a nerve, drawing praise, criticism, or even threats. We'll discuss the video and the issue of street harassment, and we want to hear from you. How do catcalls make you feel? And what have you found is the best way to respond? That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. A YouTube video that's gone viral documents the barrage of catcalls a young woman is subjected to during the course of a 10-hour walk through Manhattan. Produced by the organization Holla Back that aims to stamp out street harassment, a hidden camera was placed in the backpack of a man walking in front of the woman to record the catcalls, and even in one instance, a man walking alongside the woman for 5 minutes. The video, edited down to about 2 minutes, has struck a nerve, drawing praise, criticism, even threats. The young woman in the video has reportedly received rape threats. We discuss the video and the prevalence of street harassment with our guests, Estelle Friedman, Stanford professor of U.S. history and author of the book Redefining Rape, Sexual Violence in the Era of Suffrage and Segregation. Welcome, Estelle Friedman.
Thank you.
And Akiba Solomon, editorial director of ColorLines.com. She joins us from New York. Welcome, Akiba.
Thank you.
And Holly Curl, founder and director of Stop Street Harassment. She's in Chicago. Welcome, Holly Curl.
Thank you.
And Ms. Curl, the experience of this woman in the video, is this an extreme instance or typical of what you've heard, seen, or even experienced yourself?
Yes. So this past spring, Stop Street Harassment commissioned the first and largest nationally representative survey, and 2/3 of all women had experienced street harassment. Over half had experienced verbal harassment, and about 40% had experienced physically aggressive forms, like being followed, groped, or even forced to do something sexual. Now, the volume of harassment she experienced, that's more specific to cities where you're encountering a lot more people, but the problem of street harassment is common in every part of the country and in every part of the world.
And you also found common among many segments of people. Do you want to talk a little bit about the range of people who get harassed like this?
Well, street harassment is about power and control, and it's one more manifestation of discrimination that exists in our world. And so, one of the main targets is women because of sexism, but also it's motivated by homophobia, by racism, by classism. So people who are discriminated already for those reasons are likely to experience street harassment.
Some even as young as 7-year-olds, I read.
Yeah, so it starts at a really young age. About half of harassed people said they were harassed before age 17. And anecdotally, I've heard from so many women who said it began around puberty. And in some cases, yes, as young as 7 or 8 years old.
And what are some of the psychological impacts of this that you've heard about, Holly Curl?
Yeah, so there's a direct tie to self-objectification, which means seeing yourself through the eyes of someone else. And this is connected to increased rates in depression, eating disorders, and just bad self-image. But it can also have effects on, just your emotional state of just feeling anxious in public spaces or unsafe. And it can limit your mobility, where people who've been harassed a lot or have had a couple of really bad experiences may feel less safe going to the places where it's happened. They may feel like they need to go places with another person. They may feel like they have to start assessing their surroundings. And I've talked to women who have changed jobs, who have moved, who have given up hobbies, who, go 3 miles out of their way to get to a location instead of taking the more direct 2-block way just to try to avoid harassment. So it has a big pull emotionally and just practically.
We asked our listeners on social media how catcalling makes them feel, and we've already been getting a lot of responses. Kiva tweets, "It makes me feel angry and embarrassed. I was catcalled on my walk home today while wearing a long trench coat with the hood up in the rain." Violet writes, "It makes me feel vulnerable and unsafe. It feels like a violation." And Lydia says, "Some days I don't want to leave the house because of my neighbor's comments. I don't like that my body is scrutinized daily." I think it's interesting that Kiva talks about what she was wearing, a long trench coat with the hood up. A lot has been made about the fact that the woman was wearing a black t-shirt and jeans. And I was thinking, Akiba Solomon, about how much is what a woman is wearing still used to justify harassment of women?
Well, I mean, it's definitely one of the more persistent ideas that a woman can affect how she is treated by men on the street or by men who would commit sexual violence based on what they have on. I mean, on my own Facebook page, I had somebody intimate that, you know, basically that women ask for it if they wear certain things. And so, you know, it's just, I feel like this is just another one of those sort of reflexive things that there's sort of a list of excuses I think that men make. And this is one major excuse that they continually make.
And Akiba Solomon, you definitely point out in your article on colorlines.com that this was, that street harassment is a problem. But you also had some concerns with the video. Do you want to talk about those?
I did. I mean, basically the racial makeup of the video was disturbing to me because, you know, it was a white woman walking through New York, all through New York, and everybody who said anything to her was, you know, or black or Latino or like 99%. And so at first, when I saw it, I was just like, okay, well, that's her experience. That's what happened. So I feel ashamed about that, but that's what happened. And then I read a piece where the advertising guy who helped them do the video, helped Hollaback do the video, mentioned that they had edited out the white men who catcalled her. And the reason that he gave was that sirens were over their catcalls or they were indirect. And
so like production-related reasons.
Right. And so I still felt like, I mean, that's a little clueless. Like you can't put that out and then say, oh, well, you know, this other group, we have production problems, because there's already a feeling, there's already a racial tension there. And so it's just really important that people think about race as they think about sexism and as they think about street harassment and the different manifestations of sexual violence.
Well, what exactly do you feel like the omission of white men taps into?
I mean, I think it taps into an idea that black and Latino men are predators, are sexual predators. And for black people, I mean, there's a long history of situations where black men have been lynched because they've been accused of rape by white women. You know, obviously there's the case of the Scottsboro Boys where, you know, the woman said that she was raped on a train, and the boys ended up in various levels of pain and, you know, just in the criminal justice system. I don't say that to say, I don't want to feed into an idea of like crying rape. I don't want that to, like, I don't want people to read what I'm saying that way. What I'm saying is that this is a systemic issue. So the same people that would say that someone was crying rape might also look at black men and Latino men as if they are particularly predatory. And so I think that needs to be interrupted.
Hmm. Estelle Friedman, you have looked at sexual violence in a historical context. And historically, it's not actually been the case that it was so much men of color who were perpetrating the street harassment.
That's right. I talk about the turn of the last century, and particularly the early 20th century, when suffragists and other women first protested street harassment. They actually called it the revolt against the masher. That was the name for men who came up to them on the street. And at that time, the men who were targeted were almost entirely white men. And it goes along with what Akiba was saying, because if a man of color, particularly an African-American man at that time, were to come up to a woman on the street, he was more likely to be lynched. It was a very dangerous activity, whereas white men harassed with impunity at that time. So, and the other historical almost irony in this is that it was women of color, particularly African-American women, whether on southern streets or during the migration in northern cities, who were probably most at risk physically. That is, white women complained, and white women, working class, middle class, all kinds of white women complained about white men who harassed them. But it was black women who were more likely to be assumed to be prostitutes, propositioned, and sometimes forcibly taken, say, into a car or into an alley, not just harassed verbally and threatened, but actually physically assaulted. So it would be very interesting to reproduce that video experiment with a woman of color walking down the street and seeing who was harassing and what kind of level of harassment she was getting, because there's always been some racial element to this story.
Asaf Freeman, you've also written about how street harassment shifted from being seen as largely inappropriate, as you mentioned, women raised this as an issue, but then shifted to almost being seen as flirting. And so when and why did this shift happen?
Well, I think there's a couple of shifts. The first I would place fairly early with urbanization and commercial cities and women being more active in the public realm and beginning to get the response from men on city streets that you shouldn't be here or that you're fair game, that you are a body, that you're not a working woman or a consumer, you're really a body for our consumption. And the first phase, there's a call for male protection. Men should be chivalrous. They should take care of women. Not only should they not behave this way, but they should intervene. They should have bystander intervention, as we would say today. But then, as I say, during the suffrage movement, particularly in the early 20th century, there was a call for women to protect themselves. There were the earliest calls for women's physical self-defense training so that they would be able to walk down the street more powerfully, that they would be able to even fight off an assailant, and the call for women's rights. So in the suffrage movement, there was a call for women police officers for the first time, partly to attend to the problem of harassment on the streets, and the idea that with the vote and with full citizenship, women would be able to resist this kind of treatment and be equals. But the, again, another historical irony is that after national suffrage, after 1920, the attention to the issue of women's rights to walk safely in public space begins to be subsumed under the larger, what I've called the sexualization of white women. That is the idea in a system where all women are now supposedly sexually desiring that they have less reason to be offended by this kind of attention. So you get a more comic view of the male flirt on the street rather than the dangerous harasser, the dangerous masher. And the exception, I would say, after 1920 is the African-American press really begins to increase its coverage of white men who go into black neighborhoods and harass black women, and as part of a larger effort in the anti-lynching movement to separate the ideas of rape and race and to point out that it is white men who rape as well as black men, that it's white men who do this harassment, and that black women have respectability and should be not treated this way. And so you actually begin to get stories of white men arrested and fined and sometimes imprisoned for this kind of behavior against black women. It changes over time and it shifts racially, but I would say by the post-war, post-World War II period, there's much less attention among the black or white press about what we're now calling street harassment, what used to be called mashing, and it really recurs as an issue, I think, only in the sort of second wave, third wave feminism, and the call for women's self-sovereignty physically and women's self-defense.
We're talking with Estelle Freedman, Stanford professor of U.S. history and author of the book Redefining Rape, Sexual Violence in the Era of Suffrage and Segregation. We're also talking with Akiba Solomon, editorial director of colorlines.com, and Holly Curl, founder and director of Stop Street Harassment. Holly Curl, why do you think there's been this resurgence in the attention being paid to street harassment?
Well, there has been attention really on this issue for, you know, for centuries, for decades. And actually the first website around this issue launched in 2000, the Street Harassment Project. But I would say the huge increase in the last year or two is thanks to social media, where women and the men who are impacted are able to share their stories daily if they wish to keep this in the open to keep alerting their friends. And, you know, media turns to social media sometimes for stories. So I think it's increasing how many stories are written about this issue. And it's so easy to take videos, you know, use hidden cameras, just pop out your cell phone and actually record this. Because while we have been sharing our stories for a long time, sometimes it takes a video before someone believes it and can really visualize it and understand it. So I think it is just this ability to spread the information. And from the activist side, it's also been very amazing to be able to connect with activists all over the world and to learn from each other and to collaborate. And so I think that we are strengthening each other's efforts worldwide around this issue.
Agiba Solomon, do you feel like there's been a resurgence in attention paid to this from where you sit as well?
Definitely. I mean, 10 years ago, the phrase street harassment wasn't in popular vernacular. Now people use it and they understand it as a constellation of behaviors that mostly men, you know, practice on the street. And so I agree with Holly with the idea that it's about social media, because aside from the fact that it spreads the word, it actually can be a storytelling device. Like, media can come in and, I mean, if they're okay, they'll ask permission, but they can actually use an entire story from Facebook or Twitter to serve as an example of what goes on. And so that actually makes the work quicker. I just think that social media is a really powerful tool.
Yes. And I'd like to invite our listeners to use social media to join our discussion. Give us a call at 866-733-6786, or you can email us at kqed.org/forum. Post comments there, or at forum@kqed.org. Or, of course, you can post your comments on Facebook or tweet us at KQED Forum. Peter writes, "This is an unpleasant byproduct of classic mate-finding rituals. It's simple enough to stop. Women need to change their game. Women have taken an a la carte approach to social equity. The problem, they don't choose the unpleasant responsibilities. You know, the whole rejection thing. Men grow up having to be the aggressor in sexual situations. They have to get her attention. They have to ask her out. They have to make the move. They have to be rejected. Women won't do that. This is the result. These men have certainly never had a woman approach them, ask them out, hit on them hard. Nothing will happen without the man acting. It gets worse the less they look like Ryan Gosling. The poorer they are, the less desirable they are." Akiba Solomon, one of the things that you mentioned in your article was that you felt like the video characterizes all the men's behaviors the same way. So, for example, a hello was seen as much as a catcall as, you know, some of the more offensive comments.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that part is my personal lived experience. That is not a political stance, but I thought it was important to bring up because I do feel like, at least in my everyday life, there are gray areas. There are times when people are greeting you, and yes, it probably has a sexual intent, but it's not put that way. And so it just doesn't bother me. And sometimes I've had men say hello to me and I appreciated it. But I would hate for that idea to be placed into, you know, a context where street harassment is okay. I don't have the same experiences as an adult as many other women do. And so I wouldn't want to speak on their behalf. I just wanted to share, you know, this idea that to me there are degrees of harassment and, you know, that's it.
And what do you make of what Peter writes? He says that this is a byproduct of when you make men more responsible for asking people out, for making the first move.
I mean, I'm confused by that comment. I mean, I think that street harassment in general is about control. It's not about romantic dating. It's not about, you know, walking up to somebody at a party and asking them to dance. It's about control. It's usually fleeting. A lot of times it's not even intended to create a dialogue. It's just men behaving or men showing off for each other. And so this idea that because men have to be the aggressor in the relationship, that therefore they have to practice street harassment is troubling to me.
Adam writes, "What's wrong with someone saying, 'What's up, beautiful? Have a good day?' So now it's harassment for men to call women beautiful?" Holly Curl, do you have a response to that?
Sure. I think it's all about context. I think that if someone wants to, a man wants to pay a compliment to a woman, it's going to mean a lot more if he says it to a woman that he knows. Saying it to a random woman on the street, you don't know her history. You don't know if she's a rape survivor. You don't know, what she has going on in her life and if that's going to be welcome to her or not. And I agree that there's nothing wrong with saying hello to someone, but I think when you start sexualizing them and objectifying them, that's crossing a line for a lot of women, not everyone, but for a lot of women, and you never know. So I think it's worthwhile being conscious and just saying hello, how are you, or saying, nice dress, nice smile, something that is less sexualized. But I just wanted to say, too, as far as, like, why men are doing this, in the limited research we have about men harassing women in the streets or approaching them, it's such a small minority that admit that it's because they are trying to meet a woman. They are just trying to, they're performing masculinity. I'm harassed the most when I'm running, and so guys who are whistling or yelling out at me from their cars or whizzing by, they have no interest in meeting me. They just see a female and start acting out. So that's the problem. And sorry, just one more thing about the most recent commenter. I don't think that men are able to navigate through the world and go from point A to point B without people continually interrupting them. Even if it is just to say hello, that is still an interruption that isn't necessarily going to be welcome or not. So I think that if men choose to do that to women, and if the woman responds well, fine. If she doesn't, they shouldn't take it personally. They shouldn't get mad. They shouldn't call her name. But that's just the reality. Women are trying to perhaps just get from point A to point B. They don't want to be interrupted. So, again, if you don't want to cross the line to being a harasser, rule of thumb is maybe don't say anything or just nod or smile or say hello and don't take it beyond that. And if you want to pay a woman a compliment, say it to a woman you know.
And we're talking with Holly Curl, founder and director of Stop Street Harassment, and Estelle Friedman, Stanford professor of U.S. history and author of the book Redefining Rape, Sexual Violence in the Era of Suffrage and Segregation, and Akiba Solomon, editorial director of Colorlines.com. What's your reaction to the video? How do catcalls make you feel, whether you're a man or woman or whether it's being done by a man or a woman? Do you see catcalls as compliments or as harassment, even verbal abuse? Join the discussion at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions to forum at kqed.org, post them on our website at kqed.org/forum, or post them to Facebook or tweet us at KQED Forum. And let's go to some of your calls. Christopher in Fremont. Go ahead, Christopher.
Hi. When I've seen catcalling happen on the street, as probably everybody has, and I've seen it actually from the man's perspective be, successful, where they say, hey, girl, what's up? And then they get into a conversation. They may even exchange phone numbers because that woman is receptive to that type of communication. Personally, I see how it would be offensive. But what I don't understand is why it's just a particular way of cultural communication that some people find offensive. I find it offensive. But why can't someone just say, hey, I'm not interested? And the other piece also is the whole bit about, oh, you shouldn't be too sexual. The sexualization of women and men both is fairly commonplace, and that, whether you like it or not, that exists as a part of our cultural dialogue between the sexes. So I feel like we're just being very selective here. Why can't we just simply say, hey, please don't talk to me that way, or ignore them? I don't know why it's why this is any different than sort of a cultural miscommunication.
Well, Christopher, thanks. We'll get a response from our guests, Estelle Friedman, Akiba Solomon, and Holly Curl, after the break. This is KQED Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're joined by Estelle Friedman, Stanford professor of U.S. history and author of the book Redefining Rape, Sexual Violence in the Era of Suffrage and Segregation, and Akiba Solomon, editorial director of Colorlines.com, and Holly Curl, founder and director of Stop Street Harassment. And we're talking about the issue of street harassment after a video documenting street harassment in New York City has gone viral. Holly Curl, Christopher's comment just before the break was about women responding, and why can't women just respond in a way that's assertive or to let men know whether or not they appreciate a comment like that? Why does it have to be something that's so one-sided and demonized?
Well, for one thing, a lot of times women have been socialized to ignore it and just to be quiet. So that's the most common response. As far as why don't women just say, I'm not interested, there are women who will say that. I think it's onerous to have to say that if you're harassed a lot, if people approach you a lot. I think that's part of the issue. And the complexity is when it's happening a lot compared to once in a while, it becomes a lot more annoying and upsetting. But, you know, there's been, over the years, there's been several news stories about teenage girls and women who have been murdered by street harassers. And in almost every instance, they either ignore the harasser, said no thank you, said I'm not interested. So it doesn't stop. That's a reality that women have to deal with. Every time a man approaches her, they don't know what it might escalate into. Those are, of course, rare instances, but that is still a reality that I think is on a lot of women's minds, even if it's just kind of subconscious.
Can I say something about
sure,
this?
Go right ahead.
This is Jill Friedman. Not speaking as a historian, but just as someone who observes and lives with this. Let's say you have two people trying to get from point A to point B on a city street. One knows they can walk down the street in their kind of semi-private space, thinking about where they're going, planning their day, assuming that they will not be asked by people they don't know to interrupt that journey or that space. The other person knows on that journey, if they're going to do what your caller asked, and that is, no thank you, no thank you, hello, have a nice day, no, I'm not really interested, they do not have the same right to walk down the street in their private space. There's a difference. One is typically a man, one is typically a woman. It isn't simply about sexual vulnerability, though I agree with Holly, that is part of it. It's also about having a right to be in public space without being publicly vulnerable to that interruption. And I think that although the first caller in some ways was turning the question to poor men and how hard it is for them, I do think there's a germ of truth that if men were not socialized to believe they had to be sexually aggressive, that would be a good thing. And I don't think it's just about women having to learn how to respond and how to fend off, but really about men rethinking their behavior in public and learning to respect that private space of women.
And we're getting lots of comments. Holly writes, catcalling reminds us that we can be reduced to looks at any time by anyone. Being attractive to jerks is not my job. It's part of a much bigger problem that men feel entitled to good-looking women for no other reason than being a man in public. Adding to this is the omnipresent threat that while not all men who catcall are crazy nut jobs, it only takes one to assault you. Valerie writes on Facebook, this video is just everyday life in the Mission here in San Francisco. I was shocked when I moved from a different part of the city to hear how much the harassment increased. I've been followed for blocks at a time while being chastised for not responding to the comments. It doesn't matter what I'm wearing, not that it should, and I can't escape it for even a quick trip to the store. People feeling entitled to make unwanted comments about a person's body is harassment, regardless of gender. It just seems to be only a problem women face, mostly in urban areas. And let's go to your calls. Let's go to James in Pleasanton. Pleasant Hill. Hi, James.
Yes. Hi. Hi. I'm from New York originally, and I spent about 20 years there. And a lot of girlfriends would tell me about this type of thing, and I did see a lot of it. The question I have is just really brief, and it kind of opens up another can of worms. But how much of this study or what you guys look at has to do with obvious things about race and culture? Because it seemed to me every time I saw it, it was, I hate to say, generally black or Hispanic men that would do this type of thing. And is that just a language, or is it something that we need to look at in terms of, you know, why that culture feels it's okay to do that type of thing? And honestly, I was raised liberal. It's not something I like to open up, but it seems to me that this is not only a woman's issue, but maybe a cultural issue too.
Akiba Solomon or Holly Krull, would you like to respond to James' point about, in his experience, he feels like it is more prevalent among black or Hispanic men?
I'll respond to it. This is Akiba. I mean, I think that that's really anecdotal. So in terms of asking about what the studies have said, you know, I don't think that particular study has been conducted, so I wouldn't want to make any assumptions. But I think that people are entitled to what they observe. And I suppose that if someone has observed that it's mostly Black and Latino men, that they might jump to a conclusion and say it's cultural, but it's not cultural. Men of all races, men of all cultures are catcallers. So, you know, I don't buy into this idea that Black and Latino men do it more, so therefore it's a cultural problem.
Excuse me, even in the video,
Estelle Friedman, you have something you'd like to say?
Even in the video that set off this conversation, I understand that the person who made the video acknowledged that there were plenty of white men who were doing the catcalling. The critique was the way that their faces were obscured or the video was edited that made it look as if it was more men of color. Even the maker of the video, I think, acknowledged that there were plenty of white men who were doing this. So I would agree with the key, but we don't have that quantitative study, but even this example of popular culture suggests that it's many men of different cultures. So that would make it hard to pin it on a particular culture.
Estelle Friedman, have you ever found in your research that certain cultural norms do make it more permissible, though, in not necessarily singling out Black or Latino men, but just generally?
Well, again, interestingly, in the early 20th century, some writers, at least, some feminist journalists said that immigrant men were the most respectful of women, especially the first generation immigrant men, and it was when they became assimilated to American culture that they began to act more like harassers or mashers or catcallers. That's just, again, that's anecdotal. It's one journalist. But I think it isn't just the culture you come from, but the culture around you that supports that behavior.
Do we know about other countries? Holly Curl?
Yeah, so there are a growing number of studies about street harassment, and they're kind of all different, so it's hard to compare. But I think there is a correlation between gender equality, and I mean, there's other cultural norms too, but it seems like in Scandinavian countries, there may be less harassment in public spaces. There are also colder climates, there's fewer people outside, which may contribute to it. But then you look at countries like Egypt or Yemen, where studies have shown that it's basically 100% of women have experienced street harassment, and almost all of them have been groped in public spaces. So it's like very physical, and there's less gender equality in those countries. But, I mean, the Global Gender Gap report just came out, the annual one, earlier this week, and, you know, the U.S. ranks 20th, so we're not in great shape there either, and no country has achieved gender equality, so this is certainly a problem in every country. But my personal opinion, just from there's no direct research, but my anecdotal belief is that there is some correlation between respect for women generally in the culture and how they're treated in the streets.
Lisa writes, I can't even walk two blocks to the grocery store without being street harassed. And that doesn't count the guys hanging out in front of the store, creating a gauntlet that has to be navigated just to get in the door. Whilst out running, I've had two different young men chase me to try to chat me up and get my attention. I'm 52 freaking years old. This has been going on since I was a teenager. It's getting old. It's not a compliment. Paul in Oakland emails, if the problem is catcalls, I suggest the same technique used to deal with noisy, annoying cats. A quick squirt from a spray bottle filled with a dilute ammonia solution. I wish these jerks would quit ruining the reputation of those of us who just try to be nice. Andrew says, this is not the norm for all men. I have often wanted to approach a striking woman I see on the street, but proper etiquette prevents me from doing so. There are appropriate settings for putting down my game, and the street is not one of them. Ray writes, a large part of the problem is there is no universal standard for what's acceptable. Some women like compliments, others don't. Ignore some women and they're offended. Sometimes others are offended if you notice that they are, in fact, women. Sure, some of these guys are crude and creepy, but my standards, but what do I know? Where's the line for acceptable behavior? You know, there is a contingent, of course, we've talked about the issue of street harassment and we've heard a lot about the impacts. But there is a contingent of women who do feel or complain when they are paid no attention at all. And I wonder how you understand that phenomenon, Holly Curl, given your work in Stop Street Harassment. This, you know, women who feel like it is something that they, you know, like mm-hmm. being complimented. And in fact, when it goes away, they start to worry.
I think it's unfortunately totally understandable in our society because from day one, girls are taught that, you know, the ultimate praise you can get is male attention, whether that is positive or negative attention, no matter how it makes you feel. If it's male attention, that is good. And it's amazing how much that is drilled into our heads over and over, even, you know, the stories we're told, the cartoons, the clothes that are made for toddlers and preteens that are sexualizing them. And so it's understandable that some women find validation and self-worth from the comments from men. But what I like to do is acknowledge the common grounds that all women have where they don't want to be the target of sexually explicit comments, sexist comments, following, groping, and assault, which unfortunately happens all too often. And the other thing that I've noticed when I have heard from or talked to women who to some degree like, you know, the mild harassment or the hey, beautiful, let me get your number attention is that they'll say, oh, yeah, I liked it because, you know, then he walked away or he was respectful. It's like they still have qualifications for what they're okay with. And they may still have some underlying fear or doubt about what his intentions are until those become clear. So even on the onset, there may be a little bit of discomfort while at the same time tension with feeling good that it's, you know, they're getting attention from men. So it's a really complex issue, and I don't blame women or disrespect them if they do feel some validation from this, because that's the cultural norm.
Akiba Solomon, you've mentioned feeling validated from catcalls from time to time.
I wouldn't use the word validated. I would use noticed, but I mean, that's my personal experience. And, in the piece, I talked about what wasn't okay. And so there's sort of, I just have a set of things that make me smile sometimes. And then I have a set of things that are totally unacceptable. So,
but Akiba Solomon, what really struck me, though, about your comment, which I'd love for you to talk about a little more, is that you said, I'm not sure I'm supposed to say that, though, that I'm supposed to say that, you know, I don't mind being noticed sometimes. What did you mean by you felt like you weren't supposed to say that?
Well, because I think that people can take someone's individual experience and try to graft it onto an entire set of behavior that is unacceptable. And so it could create an opening for people, men's rights people, you know, folks who want to disregard this idea and this movement, et cetera, et cetera. So I never want to say something that can be twisted and then used against what's right. But at the same time, you know, the piece was about how it's complicated. And I think that Holly pointed that out. It's just a really complex issue.
And let's go more to your calls. Let's go to Therese in San Francisco. Hi, Therese.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have two quick things. The first one is, what if a man that you might be interested in felt that he should be careful if he makes a comment to you on the street? How else are you supposed to meet outside of social media? This is a bit different, but a fellow employee once told me I looked nice one day. Later in the day, I ran into him. He apologized and said he hoped he hadn't offended me. I felt bad for him because he probably thought about this all day. Then in regards to the omitting white men from catcalls, mm-hmm. we need to be aware of how negative images of men of color affects everyone. It can make young black men feel that maybe we are just bad. It can make young white people feel, yes, they are just bad. We must also remember that in order to justify the mass incarceration of men in color, not to say that all men of color are falsely accused, we know this isn't true, those that have money invested in the prison industry have a lot to gain with negative images such as this study. Studies like this only further support the negative message that men of color need to be feared and therefore locked up.
Therese, thanks for your perspective. Christy writes, compliments on my beauty or shouting out hi while I'm walking does not bother me. Comments on my body parts, insulting me or following me because I choose not to engage in conversation is harassment. Do you know how creepy it is to have a guy stare at you? Another listener writes, the portions of the video edited out were white men. Have heard it's because of sound quality. My experience as a white woman who has constantly been harassed on the street since I was 12 years old every day, no matter where I was or what I was wearing, is that I am accosted way more by black men and Latinos. However, I was raped twice when I was 12 and 20 and attempted rape when I was 16, and they were all white men. I'm sorry to learn that about this listener, but thank you for sharing your experience. Amanda Stupai, our engagement producer, has also given us this email from Nick, who writes, I'm a man, and while on vacation in San Diego this summer, I was walking down the street towards the convention center. There was a woman in front of me and several men behind me. The men were saying all kinds of inappropriate things until I turned around and told them to shut up. That's a family-friendly interpretation of what I said to them, but that's what it boils down to. Men need to do this. We can't suffer a culture of silence as if it's not our problem, too. I have no illusions that I convinced those men to change their ways phrase or anything of that sort, but that's missing the point. What's more important is that at that moment, the victim knew she wasn't alone. And let's go to more of your calls. Nathaniel in San Bruno. Hi, Nathaniel.
Oh, hello. Yes. Thank you for bringing up this topic. My girlfriend had emailed me this video earlier in the week, and I watched it, and it kind of brought to the forefront all of this this attention that's going on that I think is really good, which is that you know, that this kind of harassment needs to stop. And I think that social media really is helping. A couple of months ago, when the hashtag Yes All Women started trending, you know, I started seeing all these posts on Twitter, and of course, my first reaction, you know, being a man, or my first reaction to it was to say, oh, they're just attacking men, like this is just anti-men. But when I finally took the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth and shut up and really listened to what was being said, you know, it really affected me on a deep level, and it really changed a lot of my views about this. And even last week, my girlfriend was on Caltrain going into San Francisco, going to work, and she was just sitting there minding her own business, and somebody came up to her and said, you know, smile, beautiful. And it's just really inappropriate for men to be doing this in this age. It's just not appropriate. You know, I don't think that man would go up to another man on that Caltrain and say, hey, smile, handsome. You know, and that's sexism. That is sexism, you know, and so it kind of just got into my head, you know, if I am not going to go up to another man and say this on the street, then I probably shouldn't go up to a woman and say it. And I think that that's a really good general rule for other men to use. And I agree with what the last person wrote in, is that, you know, when men see this happening on the street, I feel like we need to step up and tell other men to stop doing this. But I'd also like to hear, you know, what else can we do? What else can other men do besides this? Because I've never been with my girlfriend when she's been harassed in this way. You know, I kind of don't know what else to do. So I'd like to hear your comments on that. And thank you again for bringing up this topic.
Thanks for the call, Nathaniel. Would anyone like to respond to Nathaniel's question about what else can men do?
Sure. This is Holly. You know, I think being supportive of the women in your life, like the caller said he is with his girlfriend, is huge. We don't need one more person to disbelieve us, tell us we're exaggerating, and so forth. Talking to other men about it, even if you don't see it happening, you know, just bring it up with your guy friends, and maybe they're doing it without you knowing, or maybe they can call out other people, just kind of spreading the word amongst guys, because the truth is guys usually listen to other guys more than they're listening to like me. So you have power in that way. And there's a lot of different campaigns and groups you can get involved with to try to take action in your community if you wish. I know there's a growing movement in a lot of communities to have anti-harassment posters and on public transportation and training the transit staff to know how to handle this. So even advocating for something like that in San Francisco, if you have the time and energy, that could be a huge help.
And the strategies that you are offering, Nathaniel, could also be applied to any spouse in any kind of relationship. Because men, too, are catcalled or by men or other women. And I wonder, Holly Curl, if you have been hearing any more about whether that is increasing.
Well, in the national study that Stop Street Harassment conducted, 25% of men did say that they had been street harassed. Now, that was overly, most of those men were men in the LGBT community, so a lot of it was homophobic. But actually, for straight men, too, the most common form of street harassment was homophobic slurs. So in a sense, they're experiencing a different type of street harassment, because for women, that was almost the least common form of street harassment was homophobic slurs. When men are being affected, it is a little bit different. Now, that said, there are, you know, occasionally there are men who experience catcalls. Usually it doesn't, it's not really the same underlying fear. There's not the frequencies. They may experience it differently. But, I mean, everyone deserves to be respected. I haven't really seen an increase in those types of stories, but that may be in part because the narrative in the media is that this is a men against women situation. And I myself, you really started that way too, and I have been trying to be more inclusive of men as victims and to acknowledge that that does happen and that they should have a voice as well.
We've talked about strategies for partners, but I wonder, Akiba Solomon, if you have any thoughts on effective ways to address catcalls that you don't like, or if you've ever found anything that worked well or that you use.
Well, and I've seen this online several places and agree with it. I mean, basically, this is going to sound ridiculous, but there's a certain way that you can convey that you're not interested that can shut people up. You can glare at them. You can, there's a certain sort of armor that you can wear. I mean, I used to be subject to a lot of very negative catcalling, and now probably because of age, but also just because of the way that I walk in the world, it's less of a problem. That said, I mean, that's totally subjective. Like, there's no way to tell a woman, okay, well, that face of invulnerability is the one that's going to stop street harassment, because the issue isn't what women do, it's what men do.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing that I want to say is I think it's important, too, for women to educate the men in their lives, particularly their children, their nieces, their nephews, grandchildren, you know, start young and start talking to them about what's appropriate and what isn't before they become that guy on the corner yelling at somebody.
Estelle Friedman, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, I actually agree with Akiba that there's a way that one can walk down the street that, and I found in my own history, martial arts training was a nice thing, not because you fought people off, but because you just had a presence and a way of claiming your space. I really also would underscore what she said about how we raise the next generation. I think some things have been written about that in the press already, and how, especially how boys are socialized in terms of gender relations. And I, too, have found that as I've gotten older, I have less of that kind of attention. And also, I have to admit, I have a little more tolerance for once in a while just turning on somebody and saying, is there something that you wanted to talk about? Or just completely defuse it. Who wants to spend the energy doing this? But every now and then, I must say, that has been my response, is to just try to cut through and sort of break that stranger connection and just say, you know, we're both human beings here, so what's going on?
And we'll go to more of your calls. Let's go to Anna in Oakland. Hi, Anna.
Hi. I want to comment on what was just said, breaking that stranger dynamic. Now, sexual harassment on the street, lewd comments, groping, completely unacceptable. But walking down the street and someone saying hello to you, I mean, in America, in this day and age, we have this feeling that we have this individual bubble around us all time and at all times. And I actually believe that that doesn't serve us in a lot of ways. I think getting to know our neighbors is really important. And when people catcall me, you know, nicely, when they say, oh, you look pretty today, or how you doing, beautiful, good morning, beautiful, I turn around and I say thank you. And sometimes I even have conversations with folks. And I've even made friends out of, you know, quote-unquote catcallers who many other women in this conversation would have flipped off or kept walking from. I mean, I think getting to know our neighbors is important. And street harassment, sexual harassment, abuse, assault, unacceptable. But I think there is a line. I wanted to just put that comment out there and see how the panel feels about just kind of getting to know our neighbors when they're saying hello to us. Yes, it's gendered. Yes, it's sexual, but they're also our neighbors.
Anna, thanks a lot. Holly Curl, do you have a response to Anna?
Yes. I want to live in a world where we can say hello to each other and know that there's no danger and no ulterior motive. That is the goal. And I think that if people could approach each other with that intent, it would be wonderful. And just to give an example of interactions that I find appropriate, I mentioned before, I get harassed a lot while I'm running. And on a few times, I've had people say really encouraging things to me. This one woman, this is actually, I went to college in Santa Clara University, so this was running down El Camino in San Jose. And a woman was sitting waiting for the bus, and she said, "You go, girl." And she was an older woman, and it just, I don't know, suddenly I had this vision of her maybe, you know, pre-Title IX, not able to run on her school's cross-country team, and she's seeing in me, you know, this embodiment of the future, and she's like, "Go, you go, girl." And I've gotten some comments from men, too, who are like, "Wow, your stride's really strong," or you're looking like you're doing well, you know, something encouraging that doesn't talk about my body, that doesn't sexualize me, that isn't because I'm female, coming from a man. And those are the sort of interactions that I appreciate, and it makes my day. So I think one of the callers before said, you know, it's tricky because everyone has a different comfort level. Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think that's why there's so much discussion and debate on this issue, because everyone's line is a little bit different. And if we could all agree on one line, yes, that would make it a lot easier. But it is harder to address it since there isn't one.
Rachel writes from our question, how does catcalling make you feel? She says, afraid. I had a man tell me I'd have to watch my back from now on when I spoke up for myself. You know, one of the things that I mentioned earlier was that the woman in the video has received rape threats. Where does that come from? It seems like there's still a vast amount of anger if a woman tries to fight or speak up about offensive behavior. Estelle Friedman, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I do. I think that in some ways we're living in a time when there are enormous changes in gender relations, and that part of the reaction to that is some people are very fearful of the loss of privilege that they may encounter. That is, the loss of unearned privilege, the ability to feel that all women are available to you, or that all jobs are available to you, or that anything you want is available to you. And that sometimes that leads people to have reactions of hatred, whether they acknowledge it as that, or fear that their rights are going to, they will see it as their rights are being encroached on. But really, as Holly said, our goal is a more equal world, a world in which we can all feel safe and connected as neighbors, as people. But along the way, some people, I think, are very fearful that it's a loss for them, because they were counting on somehow having control over others who they're not going to have control over. So that's one piece that I would contribute.
And we're out of time. I do just want to end with another listener email that says, as a man living in Oakland, I've seen way too many men catcall, and I once had a guy pull a gun on me for calling him out for catcalling. The problem is rampant and worse than what's shown in the recent video. Also, I dislike your guest's use of the phrase performing masculinity. Masculinity is not inherently bad, but catcallers are performing toxic masculinity. And we were joined this hour by Estelle Friedman, Stanford professor of U.S. history and author of the book Redefining Rape, Sexual Violence in the Era of Suffrage and Segregation, Akiva Solomon, editorial director of ColorLines.com, and Holly Curl, founder and director of Stop Street Harassment. Thanks, all of you, for joining us. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.